From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and soundbites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Sitting in for Tony is today's host, Jody Heiss.
Well, good afternoon, and welcome to this Wednesday edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, the Senior Vice President here at the Family Research Council and President of FRC Action. Glad to have you with us. Coming up today on Washington Watch.
The message that we are sending to everyone is, look, this is obviously a very delicate time for the region. Tensions are high. We are in the final stages, hopefully, of a ceasefire deal, and escalation has the potential to make every problem the region faces worse. And so the message that we are impressing upon everyone in the region is that no party should take any steps to escalate this conflict.
Well, that was State Department spokesman Matthew Miller earlier today. As Israel continues to await an Iranian response to the killing of Hamas leader in Tehran, the U.S. is supposedly urging against any actions that could potentially escalate the conflict, and retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Bob McGinnis is monitoring the situation very closely, and he will be joining me a little later in the program with the latest news. And House Republicans, have launched a probe into Vice President Kamala Harris's tenure as the so-called border czar. Congressman Eric Burleson, a member of the House Oversight Committee, which is the committee that is calling for this investigation, he is going to be joining me to discuss why the House Republicans are digging in to the vice president's actions throughout this current border crisis. And now that Minnesota Governor Tim Walz has been made the vice president's choice for running mate, a lot of information coming out regarding the governor's record, and it appears clear that he is not the moderate that some are trying to make him out to be. But again, don't take my words, take his.
My record is so pro-choice, Nancy Pelosi asked me if I should tone it down. I stand with Planned Parenthood, and we won.
So that was the governor himself making it very clear where he stands, not only against protecting children in the womb, but his actions have also been very harming towards children in the classrooms. Christine Troyan, executive director of the Minnesota Parents Alliance, will be joining me a little bit later to explain more details about the governor's actions. And speaking of classrooms, with students preparing now to head back to school, there are many parents and grandparents who are raising concerns about the indoctrination of their children that will, in many instances, certainly be taking place in the schools. But when we push God out, when we push the Bible out of the classroom, rest assured something else is absolutely going to fill the void. But why is it that those who insist that there must be a wall between the church and state, why is it that the same ones feel that the state should push secularism, wokeism, and even atheism, and that somehow that's okay? Well, we'll be having that conversation with Wall Builder founder and CEO David Barton a little bit later in the program as well. All right, Israel continues to await the Iranian response to the killing of a Hamas leader in Tehran, and the U.S. is reportedly urging against any actions that may escalate the conflict. All right, we don't have that clip. I had a clip for you from State Department spokesman Matthew Miller, where he was speaking earlier today. But he's calling for a de-escalation. Is that even possible? Is that even possible? Retired U.S. Army General Lieutenant Colonel Bob McGinnis is monitoring the situation. All right, and Matt Carpenter also is going to be joining me a little bit later in the program. Many of you were watching. Some of you probably stayed up late last night to get the latest news on last night's primary elections in multiple states across the country. We want to bring you some of the surprising information that was developed, and we will do that as this show unfolds. So we've got a lot coming your way today. You don't want to miss any of it. Our website, of course, TonyPerkins.com. And don't forget also, before we jump into the issues, the iVoter Guide is close to being finalized for you, your benefit. It will give you all that you need to know for the various races on national, state, and in many instances, even local elections. And we want to give you as much information as we can so that you can be as informed as possible as it comes to the elections that are coming. So to stay on top of the iVoter guides and to get yours when they are finalized, please text the word guide, G-U-I-D-E, to 67742. That's guide to 67742. All right, now let's jump into our first discussion for tonight. As I mentioned, the Oversight and Accountability Committee, which is a powerful committee, they've launched an investigation now into the role of Vice President Kamala Harris as it relates to her facilitating the worst border crisis in U.S. history. In fact, the chairman of that committee, James Comer, has demanded that Customs and Border Protection release all internal communications with the vice president's office regarding illegal immigration. Well, her campaign team has certainly sought to downplay her role as the border crisis has escalated so much. And in fact, they're even saying she was never the border czar to begin with. Well, so all of this is leaving many to ask, if that is true, then what kind of accomplishment did she have at all as the vice president? Well, joining me now to discuss this and more is Congressman Eric Burleson. He serves on several House committees, one of which is the House Oversight and Accountability Committee, which, as I mentioned, is responsible for this ongoing investigation. He represents the 7th Congressional District of Missouri. Congressman Burleson, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to have you.
Great to be on, Jody.
All right, so let's talk about this investigation that Oversight is overseeing here. Why is it important, and what are you hoping to learn through it all?
Yeah, this is one of the most catastrophic failures in American history, all the failures at our southern border, and we want to know what's the reason. And who's in charge? Look, for example, Kimberly Cheadle, director of Secret Service, recognized her failures and resigned. And I think that the failures on the southern border are just as egregious, especially when you consider how many Americans have lost their lives at the hands of an illegal immigrant, either through fentanyl poisoning or in direct violent attacks and or rapes and the like. So I think that the American people deserve answers from this administration. We have not gotten those answers from Mayorkas. And, here, Kamala Harris, there's confusion as to what her role was. But we can figure out exactly what her role was if they'll just turn over the communications and agendas and meetings that she had on the border. At the end of the day, I want to know, did you do anything? Did you... What did you attempt to do anything? Did you even try to perform in your role?
Yeah, it's stunning. As I recall, there was one trip that she made that was somewhat close to the border, but not to the border. I think within 50 or 60 miles of it. But, her campaign literally now is attempting to paint her as being tough on border enforcement. Your reaction to that?
I don't know where in the world they can, pull information to write that fiction novel. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. Especially the facts do not lie. When you've got the highest number of people that have crossed the southern border, period, and under any administration, under her supposed watch, the facts don't lie. I mean, and it's not just by a little bit. They've more than doubled, if not tripled, the amount of people that have come across the border that under the previous administration or Trump administration. So I just don't see how they can possibly spread those lies. But sadly, that's what that party tends to do, is blame or lie and accuse others about things that they've been doing.
Yeah, some stats that I saw that under Trump, there was literally eight times the deportations and so forth as there has been under Kamala Harris. I mean, that's an enormous difference. And yet somehow her campaign is now trying to paint her as being tough on the border. But they're also trying to sell the media, if you will, on the idea that what she's really been focused on is the root cause of illegal immigration, not so much the border issue, but what's causing all this problem. What is that going to come out in the investigation? Well, what do you say about that?
Well, I hope that we can find some effort that she's put forward to determine what the root cause. You know, anytime you're looking for problem solving, you do root cause analysis, and hopefully she was part of that. But at the end of the day, I think that a lot of that would point towards the fact that we're not currently enforcing the southern border. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. In addition, when you create handouts and other benefits for people who are able to get into the United States, you're only driving up the demand. And so I think that it's pretty obvious what's caused the root cause of it. I think it's obvious to anyone who's got a brain, but you know, at the end of the day, I want to see what efforts that she did, if any at all, to try to ascertain if it's the root cause, that's fine. Then give us the homework, show us your work, show us what meetings you had, what research you did, what fact-finding missions that you engaged in. I don't know that we're going to find that she did a whole lot.
Yeah, and you know, when you were talking about the root cause, I don't recall if it was her herself, but I do remember many Democrats were saying the root cause was climate change. That's what was driving so many people to the southern border. So all that will be very interesting. Thank you and the Oversight Committee for pursuing this. Listen, while I have you, your thoughts on the 2024 presidential election now that Tim Walz is officially the Democrats' VP choice?
Yeah, I think that pick says more about who they didn't pick than anything. The fact that they did not pick the obvious political choice, Josh Shapiro, because of his heritage as a Jewish individual is appalling. And I think that people within the Democratic Party are raising red flags and alarm bells about this level of anti-Semitism. Look, just a few years ago, we had Joe Lieberman as the VP pick. So the Democratic Party has made quite a bit of a shift to this point where they're turning down the most obvious political for any political chance to win. And look, who she did pick is a progressive, very progressive Democrat. We look at his history on defunding the police, and then his history in passing bills that, for example, said that the state can take away custody of children if the parents refuse to provide sex transition surgeries. This is a guy that is not at all in the mainstream middle. He
absolutely
is a far less progressive.
Congressman Eric Burleson, thank you so much for joining us again on Washington Watch. Always great to have you, my friend.
Anytime.
All right, after the break, we're going to continue our look into Kamala Harris's pick of her running mate. And not only is the children in the womb a problem, but so is the classrooms. We'll cover it all in just a moment. Stay tuned.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss. I'm glad to have you joining us today. All right, last night, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz made his first public appearance as Kamala Harris's running mate. And the Harris campaign certainly may attempt to position him as some type of moderating influence to her far-left radical agenda. But Walz's comments and his record literally leave little doubt regarding his own personal extreme positions.
My record is so pro-choice, Nancy Pelosi asked me if I should tone it down. I stand with Planned Parenthood, and we won't.
How much more clear can you get? You just heard Governor Walz himself, with total disregard for the life and the rights of children in the womb. But that's not all. The governor's made it clear that he and not parents should be able to dictate what's best for children in the classroom. Well, joining me now to discuss this is Christine Troyan. She's the executive director of the Minnesota Parents Alliance. Christine, welcome to the program. It's an honor to have you.
Thanks so much for having me, Jody. I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, look, while the nation right now, I think as a whole, we've watched declines in schools. But then when you go from the national perspective and hone in on Minnesota specifically, there's been a notable dip in education with Governor Walz. Isn't that correct?
I think a dip is really an understatement. We are grappling with the lowest test scores that we've ever seen in our state history. Our students are not thriving. And I would argue that this is not, it was exacerbated by his COVID response. But this is something that we've been dealing with since 2018 when he was first elected and even prior to that. But under his administration, we have seen double-digit decline across subjects like math and reading and science. And these are the things that our kids need to be able to succeed in the real world. We are graduating students in Minnesota that have, you know, less than 50% proficiency in basic skills.
Wow. All right. So you mentioned his actions during COVID. What else? I mean, what has the governor done that has fueled this massive decline in education scores? In fact, Minnesota is now has dipped below the national average. If I'm not mistaken, that's the first time ever for Minnesota.
Yeah, and I will say that it's, I think scores are important, and that's our way of measuring accountability of whether our schools are doing their job. But I will also mention that under the policies that Walz has signed, the ideological underpinning of most of the initiatives that are coming through his education omnibus bills are really alarming to parents. And parents like myself who really believe that students should be treated equally, that we shouldn't be adopting these illiberal and regressive approaches to treating students differently because of their skin color, certainly. And we're seeing so much of that. We have now a fifth strand of our social studies curriculum here in Minnesota, which is liberated ethnic studies. And that is nothing more than just a very radical, critical social justice curriculum that really is not what most parents want their children to be learning in our public schools.
Well, and he's also, tell me if I'm wrong, in fact, I know I'm not because I've seen it, but he's also aggressively sided with this whole gender confusion. The entire industry has been promoting the extreme gender ideology in the state as a whole. Tell us about that.
Well, it's horrific for any parent to think that they could lose their child, lose custody of their child, and have their child be shepherded through a sex change by another adult. But that is now legal here in the state of Minnesota. And so I think that that is not only trampling on the parental rights of Minnesotans, but really parents nationally. And it is really, truly the most extreme piece of legislation that we have seen around that issue across the country.
So here as an outsider, okay, outsider looking in, it appears as though, and I think you're saying this, but I want to be gracious in the way I put this up here for you. It appears as though he has not even represented or served his own people well. And it appears as though he's made decisions that you're describing that are perhaps serving union bosses or others with an ideology that they want to push, a separate agenda. One that is not shared by parents, one that is shared by not shared by most of the citizens of the state. Is that correct?
I think that sums it up very accurately. And I think that that is why he is the VP pick on this ticket. Tim Walz has shown time and time again his willingness to be obedient to a teacher union agenda and put those priorities above his own people and parents who have begged him to open schools, to open businesses, to not let our cities burn. He has no ears for his own people. And I think that the hallmark of good leadership is to truly be a servant to the people that you represent. And we have not gotten that from Tim Walz.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole purpose of our elections is it is to elect representatives of the people. And you're saying that has been gravely missing under the governor's administration. Why do you think that is so? People can look at what he has done and they can disagree with it. They can scratch their head at it. They can be angry at it, like so many people in Minnesota are. And like so many people, quite frankly, across the nation will be as they learn more about this. But why? What motivates him to be such a radical leader, do you think?
I think that's really at the heart of what a lot of people, I certainly have asked myself this question. And I think as somebody who likes to give people the benefit of the doubt and believe that a lot of people are good in their heart, I want to think that there's something in Tim Walz that thinks that he's doing the right thing, that thinks that this is, you know, an empathetic approach to being inclusive to people. And I have a hard time squaring that with just the pain that we've seen specifically out of the parent community. So much harm and so much damage has come to his own people over the course of his administration that I just can't understand how someone like Tim Walz can look parents in the face who are begging him to lead differently and truly believe that he's doing the right thing at the end of the day. And I can only keep concluding that because he is 100% kind of owned and funded and controlled by a union influence that I truly am. I'm a believer. And I think there is an element of good and evil in our world. And I just, I keep coming back to that because I truly have no other explanation for what is underlying this really radical agenda that is just tearing apart families and really forcing our kids to suffer.
Well, we've got to go. Our time is running out, but it would appear to me at least that while school is starting up again, that the grade he would get when it comes to what he's done for children and families would be an F. Yay or nay?
not yay, hooray, but yay, no. True. Yeah, I really hope that America can see through that.
Christine Troyan, Executive Director of the Minnesota Parents Alliance, thank you so much for joining us today on Washington Watch. All right, friends, after the break, Colonel Bob McGinnis will be joining us for an update on what's happening in Israel. So stay tuned.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Thank you so much for joining us today on Washington Watch. Welcome back. I'm your host, Jody Heiss. Glad to have you with us. All right, as Israel, even right now, braces for a possible attack from Iran and its proxy fighters in the region, Hamas announced this week that it has selected Yahya Sinwar, a hardline leader. In fact, he was a key planner in the October 7th attacks. But he has now been chosen to lead the political wing of Hamas. At the same time, the world seems to be putting pressure on Israel to accept a ceasefire, regardless of the terms. But what does all this look like? What does it mean when Hamas elevates an October 7th planner? What does it say about their thoughts about a possible peace deal? Well, joining me now to discuss this and more is retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Bob McGinnis. He's a senior fellow for national security here at the Family Research Council, and he's the author of Kings of the East, China's Plans to Eliminate America and Impose a Communist World Order. Colonel McGinnis, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always good to have you.
My pleasure, Jody.
Okay, look, I do want to get to the new Hamas leader, but first, you know, all of us continue to wait. We continue to watch for a possible response from the Iranian regime, a response, by the way, that they have vowed to make. Is there any possibility, do you think, that they could be looking for an off-ramp from some sort of strike that would demand a harsh Israeli counterattack?
I don't know that you're looking for an off-ramp. I know what the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei said. He's seeking revenge, and he wants Israel to pay a price. And so essentially, the meetings they've been having with their proxies in Tehran the last 2 days indicate that they are going to do something. Now, keep in mind, Jody, that the attack that was made by 300 ballistic missiles and drones, on the 13th, 14th of April, came 2 weeks after Israel allegedly bombed the consulate there in Damascus and killed seven what we believe are likely Quds Force leaders of Iran. And so, you know, we've only a few days after the attack in, you know, Tehran, what, on the 31st of October. So I think they're taking their time. Now, meanwhile, it would appear as if across the world, there are a host of precautions being taken. Not only are airlines not flying as much into Tel Aviv and Beirut, but we have government leaders who are making statements. We have President Biden called King Abdullah II of Jordan just a day or so ago. And certainly General Michael Corella, the CENTCOM commander, was in Israel on Monday of this week. Netanyahu has also made a very clear statement that, you know, we're engaged in a multi-front war and we're not going to allow these people to basically intimidate us. So you have a lot of political activity taking place. And meanwhile, of course, I believe that the Israelis are preparing for what could be a full attack from Hezbollah, the Houthis, Hamas, as well as directly from Iran, like we saw on the 14th of April. So there are a lot of things going on here. Very, very dangerous time.
Absolutely. In fact, Mensah, their spokesperson yesterday, said it's, they have a stranglehold on Israel right now, but that Israel is ready to respond both offensively and defensively to whatever comes up. I guess my thoughts with the possible off-ramp is the understanding that if Iran does attack, Israel will respond severely, be it to their oil reserves or nuclear facility or whatever, and whether or not they were considering that. Our time's getting away from us, and let me ask you about this new leader, Sinwar. What do we know about him?
Well, as you indicated in the opening, he's the guy that's behind the October 7th attack into southern Israel. So he's a bad character, someone that basically, you know, is not going to give in very much on the ceasefire negotiations, which is a clear signal to the Israelis that, you know, where we are is where we are. It doesn't appear as if there's going to be any give in the coming weeks, if not months. So the campaign in the south in Rafah is going to have to continue. And that, of course, is what Netanyahu has made very clear. They have the munitions to continue that. But, of course, the calculation is what is going to happen on the northern front with Hezbollah, because likely Iran has given Hezbollah the flexibility to attack, to respond basically to the killing of Shukr, which is, of course, the leader next to Nasrallah in Beirut that was killed the day prior to the attack in Tehran. So you have a host of issues that they're juggling in Jerusalem. It doesn't appear as if it's going to be an easy way out of what we're seeing, which appears to be something that has really got a stranglehold, as you said, on Jerusalem.
Well, it's an extremely tense time. And Colonel Bob McGinnis, we are so grateful for your insight coming on, and just want to say thank you for keeping a pulse on this and for monitoring this situation closely, and for your availability to come on and keep us up to speed. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jody. Have a great day.
You as well. All right, we've got a lot more coming your way on Washington Watch. On the other side of the break, we're going to, first of all, get an update from yesterday's elections results. We'll have a discussion about that. And then also, why is it that the left always calls for a separation of church and state, but they're totally fine with injecting atheism and wokeism in our schools? Well, stay tuned. We'll have that discussion in just a moment.
Join us October 3rd through the 6th as we gather.
Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation.
bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss. I'm honored to be sitting in today for Tony. All right, just a quick reminder, we have a petition urging both President Biden and the presidential candidates to support Israel. And we'd love to have your signature on that petition, as we're going to be sending it to them shortly. To get on it, you can go to frcaction.org/support, or you can simply text the word support to 67742. Again, we urge you to come on board and help us. It's now is the time, like never before, to help and support and pray for Israel. And if, by chance, you or someone you know is wondering why we should be praying for Israel, why we should be standing with Israel, well, Tony has a brand new resource entitled Why We Must Pray For and Stand with Israel, and we want to send you a digital copy of it. We want to send this to you to equip you to be able to answer that question. And with a gift of any size to FRC, we will get that to you in digital form. And so to get your copy, you can learn more by going to Israel. Text the word Israel to 67742. All right, multiple states held primary elections yesterday, and among the results was loss of squad member Cori Bush. That was a nationally watched election. And after she lost, she lashed out against the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, also known as AIPAC, but she blamed them for her takedown.
Pulling me away from my position as Congresswoman. All you did was take some of the strings off. But all they did was radicalize me, and so now they need to be afraid. Let me say this. I'm coming to tear your kingdom down.
Wow. Well, that was one thing that came out of yesterday's election, primary elections. What else did we learn from yesterday? Well, joining me now with an election roundup and an analysis of it all is Matt Carpenter. He's a director of all this stuff at FRC Action. Matt, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you, Jody. Thanks for having me.
Well, listen, it's great to have you. I know you were busy late last night. In fact, you were sending texts to me. We were going back and forth on some things, as always the case on these election nights. But give us a quick overview of the results yesterday across the country. Washington, Missouri, Michigan, give us an overview.
Yeah, well, you hit on the highlight first there, Missouri, the show me state, right? And you saw Cori Bush kind of dig her heels in there at the end, not going down gracefully. She's going to lash out at AIPAC and not showing any remorse or even really kind of talking about her time in Congress. But another highlight from the results last night was the performance of Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey, who actually got the most votes statewide last night and by a wide margin. And so I think that's sort of a testament, frankly, to just the way that he's handled that role as Attorney General. And so for those in our audience who care very much about faith, family, and freedom, I think they've seen some of his good work, and voters responded in a big way last night, supporting his candidacy to once again be that state's top law enforcement official. But also, you pointed out, Michigan had elections last night on the congressional side. They voted for their Republican and Democrat standard bearers. Alyssa Slotkin and Mike Rogers, respectively, won the Democrat and Republican primaries there. But also in Kansas, current incumbent Jake LaTourneur announced he won't seek re-election in Kansas's second congressional district. And so that kicked off a competitive primary there, where former Attorney General of Kansas Derek Schmidt prevailed in a heated primary there. That's a safe Republican seat. So ostensibly, we can assume that Schmidt will do quite well in 89 days. Jody, can you believe it? 89 days until the election. But we're also keeping our eye on Washington too. There's a race in Washington 4 on the Republican side where incumbent Dan Newhouse is actually trailing with 65% of the vote in there, last I saw. So it's going to be a steep climb for him to get back in that one. I don't think that one's been called, but we could have two incumbents going down last night.
Wow, interesting. I was not aware of that one. It's interesting to me, and I know we've got to move on here, Matt, but the Show Me State you brought up, Missouri, you had Cori Bush, radical squad member, left wing, on the one hand losing, and Andrew Bailey, a strong right wing conservative, winning. Do you think that's a statement that's being made, that people are rejecting this radical left wing and embracing what they know to work, the conservative values?
I think you're right. And I mean, I do also want to make a point here about Cori Bush's loss. You know, you have one incumbent lose from the squad, and it's kind of a one-off event. You can write it off. But we have to remember Jamal Bowman lost his primary in June. And he was also kind of a similar antagonistic towards AIPAC, anti-Israel, had pro-Hamas sympathies, and he went down by a huge margin. And so when you have two of them go down, you got the beginnings of a trend there.
Yep, good point. Matt Carpenter from FRC Action, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it so much, keeping us up to speed on yesterday's elections. All right, as the end of summer approaches, we've got parents and students all across the country that are preparing for the new school year. But this rapidly approaching school year also presents a number of issues of concern for Washington Watch viewers and listeners. Is this going to be the first school year where schools in many states may be forced to abide by new regulations imposed by the Biden administration's radical Title IX rewrite, for example? And that's the one where gender identity trumps biological sex. Well, that is going to be introduced in many places across the country, not to mention just plain student safety and fairness. Well, in states like Louisiana and Oklahoma, on the other hand, we're seeing pushback. In those states, we're seeing an effort to bring back much-needed Judeo-Christian values and teachings back into the public square, the Ten Commandments and the Bible and so forth. So the left is up in arms over that. But why is one worldview acceptable while another is not? Why is their secular woke atheistic agenda even forced upon students and parents, while the other is not welcome at all. Well, joining me now to discuss this is David Barton. He's the founder and president of Wall Builders. David, always great to have you on Washington Watch, sir. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Congressman. Good to be with you.
Well, listen, there's so much to talk about here. What a mess we've got, and what a battle. We have the Title IX rules on the one side. The other end of the spectrum, we've got the Ten Commandments in Louisiana. We've got teaching the Bible in Oklahoma. How much of this is maybe indicative of the type of school year we're going to have and some of the battles that we're facing across the country?
Well, this is indicative of the same worldview battles we've had for a long time. But what's happened is over the last 40 years of these kind of worldview battles, and much of this is engendered by the courts, quite frankly. It was the courts that said, well, that traditional religious stuff, you can't do that. But all the other religious stuff you can do. And so way back even in 1968, in the midst of the Vietnam War, the courts pointed out at that point in time that anything you believe so fervently that it affects your behavior, that's your religion. And so they actually identified a number of religions that didn't even have a belief in God. But again, they're worldviews that affect the way you behave. So under that concept, there's religion all over America. Progressives have their religion. They fervently believe in it. But we never hear separation church and state with them. As a matter of fact, with the new VP that Kamala Harris has picked, or Tim Walz, he's very open out front about progressive worldviews. Now, we all need that. Now, if an evangelical Christian were to say that, if Trump were to say, hey, we all need evangelical Christian principles in schools, people would go crazy. So what's happened is they have successfully recompartmentalized faith in America to only mean Judeo-Christian faith, religious faith, Jews, Christians, evangelicals, et cetera. And that's never what it's meant. And that was never what it's designed to do. But they have done a good job of taking the platform out from under us. Now, on the other side, the court in the last 4 years has given America back more religious liberties than we've had in the last 60 years. Most people are not aware that right now you have 1,200 school districts with 200,000 kids that are taking the Bible as a credit course in public schools, and the Bible is the only textbook in the course. There's a lot of good stuff happening. We just don't hear that. And so what happens is, not hearing that, we get pushed back in the corners pretty easily now. And we just can't do that. We have to push back.
Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons that we have talked about this, and we want to continue doing it. I know, David, you for years, you've been talking about all the secularism, as you were just referencing, being pushed down our children's throats, while at the same time they call for separation of church and state, which just means anything Judeo-Christian at all. But you've been saying, why is there a call for separation of Christian values, but not a call for separation of secular, woke, atheistic values? Have you ever gotten an answer for that question?
No, it is always the personal preference of the people involved. And what you find is the more secular you are, the less biblical you are, the more intolerant you are. And so these guys, when they get control, absolutely don't want any discussion. It is interesting that in the name of separation church and state, they've eliminated much history. You can't even tell a lot of the history anymore, because if you did, it would be highly Judeo-Christian. I mean, the fact that our founding fathers had called for 1,400 prayer proclamations to God by 1815, and you're going to tell me they're atheists, agnostics, deists? The only way you can believe that is if you haven't been taught history. And they've done a great job in their worldview of eliminating actual historical facts that are part of what happened. Even the University of Houston points out the single most cited source when our founding fathers wrote the Declaration and Constitution was the Bible. They cited it in 34% of their references. You can't say that in schools today. That violates separation of church and state. So what's happened is, because of their version of separation of church and state, we don't even know our own history anymore. And that's where we end up getting talked in the corners. And hopefully all these new people getting elected to school boards, they're starting to push back on that and say, no. This is actual history. This is truth. We're going to teach history. And by the way, this is a system that's the freest system in the history of the world, has the most prosperity, has everything good about this. And you don't want to promote this. You don't want to talk about this. So there is a change that's happening right now. But literally, we're at a point now where most people don't even know the history of their own company, of their own country, because we've been told separation of church and state, and that's been applied even to historical education.
Wow. It certainly has. And we find ourselves behind the eight ball now, in spite of the fact, as you said, that we have some incredibly important rulings from the courts that have given us literally back a lot of those freedoms that we haven't had in decades. And now we've got to educate people and take advantage of those things. One of the issues, I wanted to bring this up to you as an illustration, but of course the Biden-Harris administration is now promoting the use of controversial meditation, yoga, mindfulness techniques, they call it, all sorts of stuff derived from Buddhism and Hinduism, and they're wanting to interject all this into public school. And somehow this is coming from a CDC plan. But what do we make of this? I mean, this goes back to what you've been asking for years. Why the separation call for Judeo-Christian values and principles, but no problem with it if we're going to interject Buddhism, Hinduism, or whatever other ism into the schools, no problem. What do we make of this secularized form of non-Christian religion being introduced into the schools?
People will advance their worldview. This is what they believe. If it's anti-Christian or non-Christian, they're going to promote it. And the fact is, myself individually, I'm a firm believer that the Bible teaches a free market system where you have competition. You know, a lot of Christians have in their home the plaque that says, "As for me, my house will serve the Lord." Joshua 24:15, great verse, but read what's above it. Joshua said, "Hey, guys, you have a choice now. We're going to the promised land. You can serve the gods of the Egyptians from whom you left. You can serve the gods of the Amorites in whose land we're about to go. But as for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord." We had competition. Make your choice. The same with Elijah. If you want to see who's God, we'll let prophets of Baal and false prophets, 850 of them, have all the time they want to promote their faith, and then let me have my shot at it. And so when you put it on a free market, people have a right to choose. So I'm not saying that you can't have any other religion taught in schools. Not at all. But if you're going to have any other religion, make sure you also have Christianity as a competitor in there. Make sure you have that biblical faith. I'm not scared of losing that battle at all. I firmly believe that if we present the Christian faith, if they want to do Eastern meditation, go for it. Just let us have prayer meetings and classes as well. If you're going to have classes doing Eastern meditation, let's have prayer meetings, reading the Bible and praying to Jesus. I don't mind free market competition. They don't like the free market, which is, by the way, why they're socialists, because they don't like the free market in economics or in religion, either one.
Absolutely. All right, David, only got about a minute or so left, but what advice would you give to parents, grandparents of students today as we begin this new year?
It's a new world. I would point to Proverbs 21:22, a wise man attacks the city of the mighty. Because of decisions we've had from the courts in the last 5 years, and I mean dozens of them, you mentioned Title IX, that is now passed in 17 states, 27 states have introduced it, and the courts have upheld it. Every federal court has upheld that gender, that there are two genders. We need to be offensive with that. We've been given religious liberties back in a number of cases. We need to be offensive with that. Don't let the administration say, you can't do this. Yes, we can. There are a number of groups that will defend you for free that love this stuff. They won the cases of the U.S. Supreme Court. They'll win them for you. We just have to be offensive-minded, not let them push us into a corner. We need to have the same rights that they give their kids and everyone else in the nation.
And show up at the school board meetings, be engaged in what's happening in the school.
Right.
David Barton, always, always an honor to have you. I will say we raised our daughters on the information of you and wall builders, and I will never forget you being the very first person to endorse me for Congress. I'll forever be grateful for that. So thank you. Thank you for joining us on Washington Watch.
God bless you, Jody. Bless you, man.
Likewise to you, my friend. All right. That wraps up yet another edition of Washington Watch. Always tons of information to bring your way, and always trying to do so from a biblical worldview perspective. I hope you have a fantastic evening. We'll see you again tomorrow right here on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.